Welcome to Focus on the Community, a weekly program that focuses on issues and events in our community.
Happy weekend. Welcome to another Focus on Community. I'm Frank Rush. By the way, if you missed any part of today's program and you would like, you can always drop by our website. We'll have it posted there for you as a podcast, and you can download it or just stream it and listen to it and catch any of the parts that you may have missed or just weren't clear on. Tammy Silverman with the Indiana Youth Institute is our guest today. Tammy, how you doing?
I am doing well. It's good to be with you again, Frank. How are you?
Not bad. IYI based in Indianapolis, but you guys tend to pay attention to the entire state and deal with all things kids, right?
You betcha. We have folks embedded throughout the state. And again, anything having to do with kids in the state of Indiana is related to our mission, and we're concerned about it.
Which is to basically study kids, figure out what's wrong, and how to fix it.
Correct.
To put it quite simply.
Or attempt to fix it. Get closer to fixing it, right? Yeah. We don't profess to be able to fix everything, and we don't profess to be able to do it all alone. Again, throughout the state, we work with a lot of fantastic organizations that are out there serving kids as well.
Before we get rolling in the main topic here, I just wanted to bring up, too, that I would imagine that everything you guys have, because IYI has been around for how long? A couple decades or something,
just
I think.
Over 30 years.
Yeah, so three decades. Okay.
Yeah.
So before you even got there, there were several other people that were studying and putting together all the numbers and everything like you do now. You guys have never had anything to deal with like the pandemic as far as studying what has affected kids. I mean, when you think, you guys have studied, education, you've studied drug use of parents and kids, poverty, that kind of stuff. This is something that I don't think anybody probably in your group ever thought of coming.
Absolutely not. And we are so, as you said, data-driven and research-driven. It's hard to keep on top of the data, right, when it's changing so, so quickly. And so that's one of the things that we know, that we have great data, and we work with a lot of state and federal agencies to get that data. But everyone's kind of scrambling to understand and document and then do something about the impact of the pandemic.
I would think not just staying on top of the data, but even getting the data is a problem, because I know we were talking before we started the show, and that is, you're working from home, about everybody in your office working remotely from home. We're actually talking to you at your house now. Finding somebody that you can talk to and actually get the data from, who's actually generating the data that you can get, because they're stuck at home too, or not in their office. I mean, just getting the information's got to be hard.
It is. It just takes a little more coordination, right? I think most folks have become, out of necessity, pretty proficient with all things technology. And so, the folks giving us the data are still doing their jobs, a lot of them from home as well, but yet you can't just pop in and have those conversations and have those kind of ongoing conversations. They all have to be scheduled and Zoomed or Teams or whatever that is that you want to do. But we're figuring that out. I think for us, that's a lesser challenge than actually wrapping our heads around all of the short and long-term impacts for kids that are going to be coming our way.
One of the things that's kind of interesting is that now we've at least gotten back to where a lot of school districts are back in session, at least kind of somehow or another. I know here in Vigo County, they're doing alternating days. Some schools aren't back at all. Most are back. Some are back full time, just like nothing ever happened. Some are back, but they're washing hands and wearing face masks and stuff. But there's other things going on there as far as that we've talked about before, because when we talk about kids and being in school, sometimes poverty plays a role, and we don't often think about the fact that hunger is a real concern, and the pandemic is not helping things out in that regard.
You are 100% right. In fact, we always track childhood hunger numbers, and we report them in our data book and all of those things. But pre-pandemic, the child food insecurity rates in Indiana had been dropping for several years. And so, while it wasn't yet at zero, and that's our goal, is to make sure no child is hungry, the reality is it had been declining. It had been going in the right direction. However, as we know, and as you just said, hunger is so tied to poverty and unemployment. So as those unemployment rates go up, we're seeing more kids, and there are stronger predictions that there are going to be more and more children that are hungry.
And the other thing on top of that is the fact that a lot of kids not being in school took away their food supply or greatly limited their food supply because they weren't in school. And a lot of kids that are in poverty depend upon the school system to feed them.
Yep. I feel like you should have written this column. You're absolutely 100% right.
Seen how I type. It's No, I'm okay at talking about it, but probably not.
You know, one of the things that I think we don't often think about is that actually schools are the nation's second largest food assistance programs after only SNAP. And so you're absolutely right. There's a large percentage of children. In fact, across Indiana, 47.3% of Indiana students receive free or reduced price lunches at school, right? And so that's almost half. And so with the schools either being on different schedules or being virtual or whatever that is, that presents a big problem for making sure kids are being fed and that they have access to food. You know, back in the spring, there were a lot of schools that hustled really, really quickly to try to be flexible. And they did drive-through and they did to-go meals and drop-off food programs. And they did a really great job of it on the whole. That was looking a little different coming back this fall because some of those rules changed. There was a little different regulations for summer food programs versus school food programs. So, you know, we just wanted to highlight the fact that we need to be paying attention and that there's some of these policies that were in place before that needed a little adaptation that aren't as easy to execute in a pandemic.
Well, and you know, you mentioned something that's kind of interesting. The difference in rules and regulations as to what time of the year and how the program is running. And we've seen that here. When we had the drive-throughs, when the kids were out of school and the schools were closed down, let's face it, they had a lot of this food on the shelf, and they didn't want to just throw it out, so they had to get rid of it. Well, why not give it to the kids who need it? But, you know, there are still government requirements in order to get funding to go back, and now that we've gone through that, to buy more, well, you have to meet certain government requirements, and sometimes you've got to really tread lightly as to the program to make sure that you can get funded.
Right. And that's exactly what was kind of that back and forth this fall, was that the summer nutrition programs are more flexible because obviously the kids aren't in school, right? And so there's a little more, do you have to go to your home school? No, you know, all the kids from the same family. So say you have a kid in elementary school and two in middle school, during the summer, you can go to a central drop-off place. During the school year, you're supposed to get the food from your home school, which makes sense because they think you're going to be at school getting lunch, right? And so the summer was more flexible. The back to school, you know, a lot of schools were reaching out and saying, hey, can't we just extend the summertime rules so that we can continue to feed these kids? We can be a little more flexible. We can make it a little easier for families. The initial answer was no, that came from the feds. And there was a little bipartisan pushback and a lot of folks, including IYI, who said, wait a second, like, let's really try to be reasonable and think about what kids need. And fortunately, that was heard and they've decided to extend the summer food rules through the end of the year.
Which is the group of kids that probably are in the most danger of food insecurity? Are the kids out here, like where we're at, and on our side of the state, rural areas and that kind of place? Or do you find kids who, again, are probably maybe living in poverty in inner city areas, like in the inner city of Indianapolis and some of those neighborhoods? I mean, because I could see where one or the other could easily
rural
be the leader.
Is by far the number one. The number of kids living with food insecurity are in rural areas. So it's your area for sure, followed close second by urban. So one and two. Suburban kids, not so much.
Okay, and why is that? Is it just because they can't easily get to where it's at out here in the rural areas, or because there's just not enough people, you know, because sometimes concentrations of people help things out?
Sometimes they do. Again, food insecurity is tied so closely to unemployment rates. And so sometimes, you know, obviously, sometimes bigger cities have jobs that pay, you know, that they'll have a big company sitting there. And those jobs may pay a higher living wage. And so that makes that easier. That being said, there's also more poverty concentrated in urban areas as well. So it's really tied to what's the job availability in your area and what kinds of jobs are those? Is it enough to adequately feed a family?
I know that a lot of times food banks and the folks who deal in, I guess the best way to put it is charity food, they're always talking about how they're running low. So you can't always depend on them to help pick up the gap.
No, they, you know, again, I think that all of the food banks, be they part of the, you know, Feeding Indiana cohort, which is all over the state, different, they all have a little different names in different areas, whether it's those, whether it's your church food bank, whatever those things are, they're not intended to be the primary food source, right? They're intended to be actually the third in line. So you have SNAP, then you have the schools, then you have those community food banks. So I think they're being called upon to step up and do a little more right now, which is stretching them as well.
Tammy Silverman's our guest today. She's with the Indiana Youth Institute talking about hunger, a growing concern for Hoosier kids. All right, so you're the expert. How do we fix it?
Well, one, we want to make sure that, you know, we're paying attention and that we're not losing sight. And it's easy to do, right, that we're so worried about e-learning and are the kids getting all, you know, things that they need. But one of the things to remember about hunger is we can't go back and fill in that gap. So that kids that are hungry are going to have negative consequences. So we need to make sure they are getting the meals, whether that is, again, through school or through the church or through the community food bank, whatever that is. We need to get food to kids on a daily basis. So contribute to that. And whether that's financially, volunteering, whatever that is. Secondarily, really, you know, it's really encouraging to see that people came together to say, we need some common sense response here to make sure that our schools in this case are equipped to make reasonable, logical decisions for their kids. And that took some coordination. It took some phone calls. It took some letter writing. But ask your food bank. The state food bank was the one that coordinated that. So you can play a role in helping with that as well.
So how do you recognize a kid that may be in trouble? Because they don't always come right out and tell you. And sometimes there's a certain amount of shame, a certain amount of pride. You want to help the kids, but you got to know that they need help. So how do you spot the ones that need help?
Well, first and foremost, we need to, you know, really trust our educators, right? I would say those teachers that have eyes on the kids every day have a darn good sense of which kids, they might not know explicitly that kid didn't have breakfast or whatever they're having for dinner, but they have a good sense of kids that are under stress and kids that are living in food insecure families. So let's make sure that we're asking our teachers and trusting their judgment, right, so that we can lean in. Second of all, sometimes there are some schools and communities based on what number of their kids that have just said, we're going to feed every kid, right, because they have such a high concentration of kids that they know are food insecure. And sometimes that's the easier route and even the most efficient route.
And if you want to help, what do you do? I mean, everybody's saying, well, it's easy enough to just say go to the food bank and write a check. I mean, you know, but I mean, what do you do if you want to help?
Well, again, I am not a fundraiser for the food bank in any way, so I need to make sure that I make that disclaimer. But I would say that is the best way to do it because they can stretch a dollar because they get in bulk, right? Like nobody's business. So if you can, if that's workable for you, I would, you know, I think in thinking about making a contribution to your local food bank, they're used to stewarding those dollars and making it go a really long way. If you can't, they still also need volunteers. Also, you know, just sometimes, again, the schools have great information calling up and saying, you know, is there some way I can drop off, you know, do you guys need some extra food? Do you know families, maybe I can drop off a meal box. The other thing is the homeless shelters. Reaching out, again, your United Way knows where some of those are. And, you know, they have some, again, they're pretty expert at feeding the folks that they're serving. So asking them, you know, how can we be of help? Maybe how could my Cub Scout group or fill in the blank, whatever, Bunko group or whatever that might be, asking how you can help. And just raising that hand and saying, we're worried about our kids being hungry. Let me know how I can help. Those experts will tell you how you can help.
And a lot of times school systems have what we have in Vigo County anyway. We have the backpack program.
Yeah.
Where it's basically food for after school or to get the kids through the weekends. And it's really kicked in over the summer with everything going kind of nutty like it was. So you can also just contact your central administration of your local school district and just ask them if they have such a program or something like it. And where do you donate? What do you do?
Absolutely. And what are they most in need of, right? They may have tons of peanut butter, but they need fill in the blank, whatever that might be. So again, they know their systems best and just showing up and asking how you can help would be unbelievably appreciated.
Tammy Silverman with the Indiana Youth Institute. You guys have a great website that has information on this topic and a whole lot of others that you could go through, and you could basically just sit and read for weeks and weeks and weeks.
You could. We'd love for you to do that.
Yeah. Which is?
IYI.org. Everything's there and free for the public. Anyone that's interested, again, we invite you to come to the website, IYI.org.
And it's not a website that stays static for months on end. I mean, you guys are constantly putting up new stuff and articles and information and that kind of thing, too.
Every single week. Every single week.
So you can actually make sure you go by so that way you don't miss anything.
That's right. And, you know, there's always something new. And again, sometimes when folks do, we look and see what's most of interest to them, and then we can dive a little deeper into that. This came up because, again, some of our friends at the food bank system raised our awareness to it and what some of those challenges were. So we did a deeper dive, and we're happy to do that from any source.
And, of course, it might be a place, too, where you could just pose a question, and you guys might think, you know, this is not a bad idea. Maybe we should look into this a little bit more, too, because, you know, I mean, you've got lots of questions and answers, but you don't have it all, so somebody might have an idea, and maybe you could take that and run with it, too, if they just make the suggestion.
100%. We would welcome that, and we look for it, right? We invite that and welcome it and appreciate it.
Tammy Silverman with IYI.org, Indiana Youth Institute. Again, IYI.org is their website, and drop by the website and see what they've got to offer. And we'll talk to Tammy again coming up in the not-too-distant future with more info. And if you'd like to hear a repeat of today's program, just drop by our website. We've got it posted there for you as a podcast. We will see you next weekend.
You've been listening to Focus on the Community, a weekly public affairs program that focuses on issues and events in our community. To be considered as a guest on Focus on the Community, contact us by calling 812-420-2518. Be sure and tune in again next week at this time as we focus on the community.